Well, he thought you were going to be playing with him. Now it's Enzo's turn to look guilty. He should have known better, though. When you tell your 9-year-old son that you're going to play baseball with him, it's a good idea to actually do it. Or else bad things happen. Windows get broken. Which window was it? Suzette asks. It's on the 2nd floor, I say. The middle one on the side. Oh, she taps a manicured fingernail on her chin. The stained glass window. Stained glass? Oh, God, that sounds extremely expensive. Enzo's eyes widen. He's clearly thinking the same thing. There's absolutely no way we're going to be able to afford to pay for a new stained glass window. What if, I say tentatively, Nico performs chores around your house until he's paid off the window? Suzette clearly does not like this idea. Her whole body goes rigid. I'm not sure about that. I need to sell this because we cannot pay for that window ourselves. It's the only way for him to learn to take responsibility for his actions. I look over at Enzo for support. He nods his head slowly.
Yes, I agree. Suzette, I think it would be very good for my son to be able to do the chores for you.
I have someone to do chores. Suzette folds her arms across her chest. Martha comes 2 days a week.
Then that leaves 5 days a week for Nico to come, I point out.
I'm fairly sure Suzette would have refused, but Enzo scrunches his brows together, his dark eyes narrowing.
Is there a reason why you do not want my son in your house?
Finally, she throws up her hands. Fine, he can do a few chores for me. For the first time since Suzette suggested Enzo teach her gardening tips, the tension drains out of me. Suzette hasn't mentioned money at all. We won't have to pay for the stained glass window, and Nico will learn to take a little responsibility for his actions. And it also occurs to me that with Nico around, Suzette may refrain from hitting on my husband. I have solved all my problems. And the sour look on Suzette's face is just a bonus.
15.
I have been tasked with the job of getting Mrs. Green home. That is what I've been told. Mrs. Green had a mild heart attack, and she's fine. Meaning, she's as fine as she was before. But I question whether she was actually fine before, because she has been fairly confused during her hospitalization, and her family told me she's been falling a lot. One of the things I've learned since I started working in the hospital is that a large number of elderly people who live alone probably should not be living alone. And if you want to get really freaked out, I'll tell you how many of those same people are still driving. Since getting my social work degree, I've worked in a variety of places. I started out working with children, but once I had a child of my own, I struggled to deal with some of the terrible things that happened to kids at the hands of people they were supposed to trust. Every night, I would hold Ada on my lap and sob about the atrocities I saw that day. It was tearing me apart. It was Enzo who recognized what the work was doing to me and heard about an opening for a hospital social worker. I applied for the job, and it was the best thing that could have happened to me. I work with a primarily elderly population, and they need my help just as much as the kids did. But I don't cry all the way home anymore. Mrs. Green is lying in her hospital bed. She's a tiny peanut of a woman, 91 years old, with a puff of downy soft white hair, and covers neatly tucked up to her armpits to cover the nightgown her family brought her from home. "Hello, Mrs. Green," I say. "Do you remember me? I'm Millie, your social worker." She smiles up at me.
"Are you here to take out the trash? Because it's very full."
"No, I'm your social worker." I get closer to her and point to the badge on my chest. Then I raise my voice because I suspect that could be the issue. Her chart said HOH, meaning hard of hearing.
"Social worker."
She nods in understanding.
"Can you mop the floor, too?"
"No," I shake my head and point more emphatically to my badge.
"I'm your social worker. I'm here to help figure out how to get you home."
She points at a pile of clothing that is on the little hospital dresser.
"And can you fold my clothes for me?"
I'm not here to clean Mrs. Green's room or fold her laundry. But on the other hand, she's clearly very anxious about the state of cleanliness of her room. Maybe if I fold her clothes, she will trust me. And the truth is, a pile of messy clothes bothers me too. I can imagine being 91 years old someday, lying in a hospital bed and being bothered by the dirty floor and unfolded clothes. Enzo will still be carrying sofas at that point. I don't have a mop with me, so I get to work folding her clothes. Unfortunately, all she brought is a big pile of nightgowns. Mrs. Green sort of seems like one of those women who wears nightgowns for all occasions. Again, I can see myself being like that someday. I look forward to a time when I can wear pajamas 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and not face any judgment for it.
"Hey," she calls out, "what are you doing?" "I'm folding your clothes for you, Mrs. Green," I say as loudly as I can. "You're stealing my things," she gasps.
She jams her thumb into the red nurse call button.
"Thief! Thief! Call the police!"
Even though I recognize Mrs. Green as a confused older woman, my heart skips a beat in my chest. How could she accuse me of stealing from her? I'm just trying to help her fold her clothes like she asked me to. A second later, the nurse supervisor for the floor, a sturdy woman named Donna, comes bustling into the room. By this point, Mrs. Green is screaming at the top of her lungs that I'm a thief and the police need to be contacted. I have dropped her clothing, and I'm holding my hands up in the air just to make it incredibly clear that I'm not stealing anything from her.
"What's going on here, Millie?"
Donna asks me in her thick Long Island accent. Or is it on her thick Long Island accent?
I swallow hard. "I didn't steal anything. I was just helping her with her clothes, I swear."
"Liar!" Mrs. Green shrieks. "She was stealing my stuff. You need to call the police right now."
I stand in the corner of the room, squeezing my hands together while Donna does her best to calm down Mrs. Green. It takes several minutes, but after tuning the television to some show about Christmas caroling, even though it's spring, Mrs. Green finally seems placated. I, on the other hand, am a disaster. I follow Donna out of the room, but my knees are still wobbly. Donna is utterly unshaken by the interaction. There's not even one hair out of place in the high bun she keeps on her head. But by the time I get back to the nurse's station, my head is throbbing.
"Are you okay, Millie?"
Donna asks me. I didn't steal anything.
Of course you didn't.
She pulls off her stethoscope, hanging from her neck.
You know she has dementia, right? It was all over the chart.
It was all over the chart. And anyone else would have shrugged off the interaction, but I can't. Not with my background. Spending 10 years in prison for murder changes the way you look at things. Donna most likely doesn't know anything about it, and I'm not eager to tell her the story. The short version is that when I was a teenager, a boy tried to rape my best friend. I walked in on them and bashed him on the head with a paperweight. Unfortunately, that didn't stop him. So I hit him again and again. Eventually, he stopped breathing. The boy's parents were very wealthy, and they weren't about to let me off the hook for killing their pride and joy, even though their pride and joy was a rapist. A good lawyer might have been able to get me off, but I only had the public defender, and he wasn't a very good one. I was found guilty of manslaughter and served 10 years in a women's prison. It's not something I go around telling people. Even though I don't regret helping my friend, my time behind bars is not something I'm proud of. But when this hospital hired me a couple of months before I moved out to the island, I disclosed it to them because I had to. I wasn't sure if they would still want me after that, but they did. Social workers are in short supply. Still, it leaves me feeling paranoid. At my last job, some objects around the hospital went missing, and I was the only one who got called in by the police to be questioned about it. It's not like they brought me into the station or anything serious like that, but it was very clear that because of my background, they were looking at me more closely than anyone else. Is Donna looking at me that way? Does she think I really stole something from that room? Does she know?
Millie, she says.
A cold sweat breaks out on my forehead. Yes?
You look really pale. You should sit down.
Donna manages to grab a chair for me just before my legs collapse under me. She instructs me to put my head between my legs, and then she goes all nurse on me, grabbing one of the automatic blood pressure cuffs.
Did you eat lunch?
She asks me. Uh-huh, I manage.
You look queasy. Let me take your blood pressure.
Donna insists on wrapping the blood pressure cuff around my arm, even though I'm sure my blood pressure is fine. It's not a blood pressure issue.
I'm just scared she knows that I'm a convicted killer. That's all. Sheesh.
I sit there while Donna watches over me. The blood pressure cuff tightens around my left biceps. Then the pressure eases up. Then it tightens again. Then the cycle repeats another 2 times. Donna swears under her breath. But finally, we manage to get a blood pressure reading.
Whoa, she says.
That is not the response you want to hear from somebody after any kind of medical test. What?
Your blood pressure is high, she says. Really high.
It is?
Yes. What was it at your last doctor's appointment?
Truthfully, I don't go to the doctor very often. I used to go to my OBGYN more frequently prior to getting my tubes tied, but Given that my childbearing years are over, it doesn't seem like there's much point to it. The last time I went to any kind of doctor was about 3 years ago, which is ironic since I work in a hospital and I'm around doctors all the time. Well, I'm feeling anxious, I say, and it's not any better now that I know my blood pressure is high. That's probably why.
It's pretty high, Millie. You should call your doctor.
Great. One more thing to put on my plate. Is it that big a deal?
No,
she says. And before I have a chance to relax, she adds,
I mean, not if you don't care if you have a heart attack or a stroke.
That's ridiculous. She is completely overreacting. I'm not old enough to have a heart attack or a stroke. And I'm in pretty good shape. I don't need to deal with this blood pressure issue right now. Obviously, I'm just stressed out from the move. And last night, I got woken up again by that scraping sound coming from somewhere within the house. Although, thankfully, it stopped before I had a chance to consider investigating. I'm sure once everything settles down, my blood pressure will get better, too.
16.
After dinner tonight, Enzo helps me clear the table. He's pretty good about doing stuff like that. Or, at least, he's gotten good about it after several snarky comments over the years. But now, he's great. He brings all the plates and glasses into the kitchen without even being told.
Another delicious dinner, he declares as he drops a couple of plates into the dishwasher.
I look down at the plate in my hand. It's Nico's plate, and it's hardly been touched. I didn't feel like fielding any complaints tonight, so I went with the tried and true macaroni and cheese. It's got his three favorite things: noodles, butter, and lots of cheese. And usually, he eats like a horse. Between him and Enzo, I'm lucky one of them doesn't take a bite out of me.
Is Nico okay? I ask. He didn't eat his mac and cheese.
Maybe he had a big lunch?
Maybe.
Maybe he is sick of macaroni and cheese?
Never.
He grins at me.
Maybe he's been eating little kiwis flies.
That horrible praying mantis has molted again. I have discovered every time it molts, it gets a little bit bigger. And it's already way too big, in my opinion. But Nico loves that insect. He asked to bring it to the dinner table last night after he came back from doing chores for the Lowells. That was a hard no. I look down at the plate, resisting the urge to eat the leftover macaroni myself. I don't need the calories, though, especially since I'm now having health issues. Although, I still don't believe that I need to see a doctor. I looked it up, and automatic blood pressure cuffs are notoriously inaccurate. By the way, I say, when I was at work today, this nurse checked my blood pressure while I was all keyed up over something, and it was apparently really high. She was making such a big deal out of it. Enzo is usually sympathetic when I tell him stories about my day at work, but this time, he frowns at me.
Why is your blood pressure high?
I don't know. I scrape the mac and cheese into the garbage disposal and stick the plate in the dishwasher. Hey, let's get the dishes going.
But the dishwasher is not full.
Yes, but Martha is coming tomorrow, so I want to get these dishes washed and put away before she comes. He scratches his chin.
I do not understand. Why do we have to clean the dishes to get ready for the cleaning person? And before dinner,
You are vacuuming.
I just want to make sure everything is clean for her.
But she is coming to clean.
He shakes his head.
Maybe this is why your blood pressure is high, yes?
Whatever, I mumble. It wasn't that high.
You said really high.
No, I said pretty high. I try to push past him to get to the dishwasher. Can we please get these dishes clean for tomorrow?
Enzo reaches into the cabinet that contains the dishwasher detergent. He fills up the cup, then slams it closed and presses the button to start the cleaning cycle. When he's done, he turns to look at me, his muscular arms folded across his chest.
Okay, now we do not have dishwasher excuse. We can talk about your blood pressure.
Oh, God. I roll my eyes. Look, I wouldn't have said anything if I thought you were going to make such a big thing about it.
Why wouldn't I make a big thing about it?
He retorts.
You are my wife, and I want you to be healthy and live forever.
That's sweet, I guess, I admit. But you're making too big of a deal out of this. I was just stressed out, and that's why my blood pressure was high.
Fine. Then you go to a doctor and get it checked out.
But
you never go to the doctor, Mili,
he points out.
Neither do you, and you're even older than I am.
He looks like he's going to protest, but then his shoulders sag.
Fine. We both go see doctors. Okay?
Fine. Fine. Enzo is obviously going to nag me about this until I agree, so I'll go to the doctor and let them check my blood pressure, but I'm sure it will all be fine.
Also, he says, we should get life insurance policies for each other.
I don't like the turn this conversation is taking. It's bad enough I have to find a new doctor to see and make an appointment. Life insurance policies? I don't know about that. Why would we get those?
Why wouldn't we?
He glances out the window, where we have a spectacular view of the Lowells' much larger house.
What if something happened to me? You would be alone with the children. You should have money.
I close my eyes, not wanting to imagine the death of my husband. It's almost unthinkable.
Okay, so take out a life insurance policy on yourself then.
And you should have one too.
So you get a payoff if I die?
He presses his lips together.
Mili, you know this is not for me.
This is for our children, so they have a roof over their heads.
You know we are barely able to pay the mortgage as it is.
He's not wrong. A lot of people with children have life insurance policies. Several years ago, we were talking about it, but we both got so upset at the idea of one of us dying that we never ended up getting them. I'm not sure if my blood pressure is high or not right now, but it feels high.
I know this is a sad thing.
Enzo picks up my hand in his.
I would not want to ever lose you, but this is responsible.
Yes, that's true.
Also, he adds, Suzette recommended a very good insurance agent. I could give him a call tomorrow.
Oh, Suzette was behind this. Now it all makes sense.
So, for 11 years, you don't think we need life insurance, I say. And Suzette says one word about it, and now we have to call this guy tomorrow?
Mili.
His face flushes slightly, although it's hard to tell because of his olive skin tone. I am trying to take care of my family, no matter what happens to me. Fine, okay. God, why is he making me feel like I'm the one being difficult? Life insurance is a big deal, isn't it? I know it's important, but I don't want to rush into buying something, especially when we don't have a lot of disposable income. It's not like I'm dying tomorrow, after all.
17.
Are you dying, Mom?
Ada asks me the question as I'm saying goodnight to her. She's lying in her twin bed, the blanket covered in pictures of dogs pulled up to her chin, her little face scrunched up with worry. Ada has always worried too much. That girl keeps the weight of the world on her shoulders. Even as a toddler, she used to fret over everything, especially Nico. When Nico had so much as a sniffle, she used to cry over it.
I'm not dying.
I swipe a few strands of black hair from her face.
Why would you say that? I heard you and Dad talking about it.
Oh, great. In our old apartment, we were acutely aware that the kids could hear through the paper-thin walls. Somehow, we have been under the misapprehension that it's different in this big house. But apparently, they can still hear everything.
I'm not dying, I assure her. Then why are you getting life insurance?
I sense that in case we die is not the right answer, although technically it is the right answer.
It's just in case some weird, unexpected accident happens,
but that won't happen.
It might.
Ada has the same crease between her eyebrows that Enzo gets when he's worried. She looks a lot like him. Same eyes, nose, skin tone, thick black hair. But she doesn't have his personality. And honestly, for better or worse, she's not much like me either. She's one of those kids where you're not entirely sure where she came from. Maybe she's like one of her grandparents. My mother and I are estranged, but she always seemed very anxious. And her intelligence is a mystery, too.
Ada.
I climb into her small bed, curling up beside her warm body. In a few years, she won't let me do this, so I'm going to enjoy it for now. I'm going to live a long time, probably after you have kids, and maybe even after your kids have kids. And your dad, well, he's probably going to live forever. If anyone in this world is immortal, it's Enzo, so it could very well be true.
Then why do you need life insurance?
This conversation could potentially go on the rest of the night.
Ada, I say, you need to stop worrying and get some sleep.
She squirms under the covers.
Is Dad coming in?
Right now, both of our kids require both parents to say goodnight before they can fall asleep. It's a routine that is simultaneously sweet and exhausting. After I'm done with Ada, my next stop will be Nico's room. That's probably where Enzo is now. We can trade off. I'll send him in next, I say. That gets a smile out of her. As much as I hate to admit it, Ada is a total daddy's girl, from the moment she was born. I remember when she was an infant. There was one day when she was screaming her head off for 2 straight hours, and the second Enzo came home from work and held her, she quieted down in an instant. So, if anybody can make her feel better, it's him. when I arrive at Nico's room. I expected to see Enzo and Nico together in the room, feeding some flies to the praying mantis or something horrible like that. But Enzo isn't in the room. Nico is alone in his bedroom, and the lights are already out, although his eyes are still open.
Tired? I ask him. Kind of.
I squint through the darkness at his face. He also has similar features to Enzo, although I suppose he looks more like me between the two of my children, which isn't saying much. We named him Nicholas, after Enzo's father.
Is everything okay?
Mm-hmm. Nico has the praying mantis right by the head of his bed. It's a little hard to see in the mesh enclosure, but when I finally spot the long, thin insect, I can see its little hands rubbing together. That bug definitely looks like it's plotting something. I know boys are into bugs, but why would anyone want something like that inside their bedroom? Is there something wrong with him? No, there's nothing wrong with Nico. He is the happiest, most well-adjusted kid ever. Everyone loves him. I cringe as I lean past the enclosure to kiss my son on the forehead. Tomorrow, I'll have to talk to him about moving it. Maybe to the other side of the room. Or possibly out of the house entirely. Good night, I say.
Good night, Mom,
he says sleepily. As I pull away, I glance out the window. It's close to a full moon tonight, illuminating our perfectly trimmed backyard. By the summer, I bet we will have the best yard in town. Enzo will make sure of that. But my eyes are drawn to something outside of our own backyard. The Lowell's yard. I thought Enzo was in the house, saying goodnight to the children like I am. But he isn't. For some reason, he is in the neighbor's backyard. But he's not working. He's standing next to Suzette, and they're talking. I watch them for a moment from within the darkness of my son's bedroom. It could be entirely innocent. After all, they're neighbors, and they have been working on the yard together. But there's something about it that hits me wrong. After all, it's 10 o'clock at night. Why would my husband be out in the backyard with another woman? He doesn't touch her. He certainly doesn't kiss her or anything like that. They seem to just be talking. But there's still something about it that makes me uneasy. I can't shake the feeling that Enzo is hiding something from me. 18. It's 6 in the morning, and someone is breaking into our house. It's not the scraping noise this time, which I have heard a handful more times since I tried to investigate. I've convinced myself that the scraping must just be a branch somewhere, which scrapes against one of the windows downstairs. But this is a very different kind of sound. These are loud noises. Footsteps. A door slamming. It's loud enough to make me sit up in bed, even though my husband is still snoring softly in the bed beside me. This is supposed to be a safe neighborhood. Stuff like this isn't supposed to happen here. A resounding thump from downstairs has me sitting bolt upright. Is this one of those home invasions? If it is, what do we do? We don't have a gun. Enzo used to keep one in our apartment, but after Ada was born, he got rid of it. He was terrified of her finding it and hurting herself. I'll just have to call 911 and hope they get here quickly. Enzo is sound asleep beside me, completely unaware of the home invasion in progress. He came to bed so late last night, I never had a chance to ask him what he'd been doing with Suzette in her backyard. And now, it's the last thing on my mind. I shake my husband awake more aggressively than necessary.
Enzo, I hiss. Someone broke into the house. I'm calling the police.
Que?
He rubs his eyes. His accent is heavier first thing in the morning.
Broke in. Don't you hear them?
He listens for a moment while I practically want to scream.
Is Martha, no?
Martha? How did Martha end up in our house at 6 in the morning? How did she get in?
I give her a key.
I stare at him, horrified. You gave her the key? Why?
Why? So she will not wake you up when she comes in to clean.
He groans and throws his head back against the pillow.
Go to sleep, Mealy.
And now I hear the distant sound of a vacuum running downstairs. Okay, fine. I guess he's right. Most burglars don't take the time to vacuum the living room, so it must be Martha. But even now that I know my home isn't being invaded, I can't go back to sleep. My heart is still racing. So instead, I get up and take a shower. I may as well start my day, especially since Nico usually takes some persuading to get out of bed. I come down the stairs about half an hour later, freshly showered and dressed. I'll grab another banana from the kitchen so I don't get in Martha's way. She does an extremely thorough cleaning of the kitchen. Except, Martha isn't in the kitchen. She's next to the desk we keep in the corner of the living room. And she's not cleaning the desk. She's looking through one of the drawers. I watch her for a moment, and all I can think to myself is, what the hell is she doing? I never rifled through any drawers like that when I was cleaning for people. Martha? I finally say. She raises her eyes. I may not know Martha very well. She rarely speaks to me unless absolutely necessary. But I know a guilty expression when I see one. I've got to hand it to her, though. She composes herself very quickly.
I needed to leave you a note, so I was looking for a pen and paper,
she tells me.
We are almost out of cleaning spray.
Are we? That could be true, I suppose. But I'm willing to bet she wasn't looking for a pen and paper. Martha disappears back into the kitchen. I can't believe I caught her going through my desk drawers. That's a fireable offense. Granted, Suzette highly recommended her, but it's not like Suzette is high on my list of people I trust. There's something about Martha that I don't like. I wish we could get rid of her. I don't know what to do. How do you even fire someone? I mean, it's been done to me before, so I understand the general concept, but my heart speeds up at the idea of it. My blood pressure is undoubtedly through the roof. I start to sit down on the sofa to contemplate my next move, but it's a good thing I'm wearing slippers because it turns out there is broken glass all over the floor in front of the couch. It takes me a second to realize that the vase I usually keep on the coffee table has been knocked over. A pile of lilies, as well as endless shards of glass, are scattered all over the floor. Okay, now I'm pissed. and I have another reason to fire Martha. I march to the kitchen, trying to avoid the glass, which seems to be just about everywhere. I'm surprised I didn't hear the shattering of glass from upstairs, only the usual thumps associated with cleaning. In the kitchen, Martha is spraying down the counter with a bottle that looks pretty much full to me. "Martha," I say sharply, "you could have warned me about the broken glass all over the floor." She doesn't even bother to look up from the counter.
"What broken glass?"
"You knocked over a vase on the coffee table," I say tightly, "and it broke, and there's glass everywhere." Martha finally puts down her sponge. She faces me with her dull gray eyes.
"I didn't break any vases. I haven't even started cleaning in the living room yet."
Seriously? First, she was going through my drawers. Now, she's pretending she didn't break a vase when she obviously did. I can't believe Suzette recommended this woman. "Martha," I say sharply, "if you break something, you should at least have the courtesy to admit it. I'm not going to charge you for it,
but I am going to fire you."
She blinks at me.
"I don't break things," she says stiffly. "But if I did, I would admit it."
"Then who broke it?" I shoot back. "Did it just walk off the table and break itself?" This is unbelievable. It's not like I didn't break my fair share of glasses and vases and whatever when I was cleaning houses. But I always admitted it. It was obvious that I did it, so what would be the point of lying about it? But Martha is stubbornly refusing.
"What is going on here, ladies? What is the shouting?"
Enzo is standing at the entrance to the kitchen.
Apparently, I was shouting. I didn't think I was, but I feel a little vein throbbing in my temple like it sometimes does when I raise my voice too loud. Martha places her hands on her sturdy hips on either side of her immaculate white apron.
"Mr. Accardi, can you please tell your wife that I did not break the vase in the living room?"
Wow, now she's turning my husband against me? This just gets better and better. "I found it broken when I came down here this morning. Who else would have done it?" Enzo snorts.
"That sounds exactly like the work of Nico."
Granted, Nico does break a lot of things. But when he does, he always tells me about it immediately. He's not one to break a vase and then just leave all the broken glass behind in the living room. I know him well enough to know he wouldn't do that. "It wasn't Nico," I insist. "Besides, he's still asleep." Enzo looks down at his watch.
"Well, it is time to wake up, I think."
Before I can stop him, he goes to the foot of the stairwell and starts shouting Nico's name. It takes a good minute of him shouting for Nico to get his butt down here until my son descends the stairwell with sleepy eyes and tousled hair.
"What is it?"
Nico mumbles, still rubbing his eyes.
"Why are you bothering me?"
"Nico," Enzo says sternly, "did you break the vase in the living room?"
There's a long pause while all three of us stare at Nico.
"Oh,"
he says.
"Yeah."
I stare at him astonished. "Seriously? Why didn't you say anything? I could have cut my foot open on the glass." He shrugs.
"You were asleep. In the middle of the night, I got hungry, so I went downstairs to get some food, and
That's when I bumped into the table and it fell.
Great. I knew he was going to be hungry after not finishing his dinner. Also, it disturbs me that the sound of shattering glass didn't rouse me from sleep. What else am I sleeping through? You could have tried to clean it up, I point out. You told me not to touch broken glass.
That is true. But still, I would have hoped Nico had more of a sense of responsibility, especially now that he's doing chores for the Lowells.
Martha, Enzo says, we are so sorry. We thought you broke the vase. Clearly, we were mistaken.
He's being generous. I was the one who accused her of breaking the vase. In my defense, it really seemed like she had broken it. But I know the feeling of being wrongly accused, and I feel terrible that I did it to Martha. Moreover, I have been accused without any sort of apology plenty of times. A woman I was cleaning for once accused me of taking a ring she left in the bathroom, and when she found it behind the toilet later that day, she didn't even tell me she was sorry. I do not want to be that woman.
I'm so, so sorry, I say to her. I jumped to conclusions and I was completely wrong. I hope you can accept my apology.
Martha doesn't say anything.
And we will clean up the broken vase, Enzo adds. Of course.
She rests her gaze squarely on my face.
I did not appreciate being made to feel like a criminal.
I suck in a breath. Why did she look at me like that when she said the word criminal? That was not just my imagination. Is it possible Martha knows about my past? Does she know that I've been to prison? Oh God, has she told Suzette? The idea is unthinkable. Suzette would have a field day with that information. But she couldn't possibly know. My last name is different now, and it's not like she has my social security number to do a background check. I'm just being paranoid.
I am sorry we made you feel like a criminal, Enzo says, oblivious to the edge in her voice. Will you please accept our apology?
Finally, she nods, and without another word, she does an about-face, marches back to the kitchen, and starts cleaning again.
Come on, Enzo says to me. We need to get this cleaned up before the kids get downstairs. There is glass everywhere.
I can't help but feel irritated that even though I now have a cleaning woman, I will be spending the beginning of my morning cleaning broken glass. Not that I haven't cleaned my fair share of it over the years. The irony is that if I hadn't accused her, Martha would have probably cleaned it for me. So fine, she didn't break the vase. But I didn't imagine the look on her face when she said the word criminal. She was definitely snooping in the drawer of that desk. I saw that with my very own eyes. And I'm not sure I believe her excuse. Why was Martha going through my drawers? What was she looking for? Has the woman been digging into my past? I can't shake the feeling that I don't trust this woman who Suzette sent to work for us.
19. It's not as easy as it seems to make an appointment with a new primary care doctor. I called half a dozen practices in the area, and none of them said they were taking new patients. Honestly,
I would have given up, except Enzo kept asking me every night before we went to bed if I made that appointment yet. Finally, on my seventh try, I booked an appointment with Dr. Suderman, but I had to wait 3 weeks to get in. But here I am, wearing one of those gowns that opens in the back as I sit on the examining table, waiting for Dr. Suderman to enter the room. I have already had my blood pressure taken, and the nurse made a surprised sound when she saw the number, which didn't make me feel great about the whole thing. So now I'm sitting here, nervously waiting, and there's this breeze from the vent that is hitting me exactly where my gown opens up in the back. After what feels like an hour of waiting, Dr. Suderman knocks once, then enters the room. I saw a picture of Amanda Suderman online when I booked the appointment, but I was not fully prepared for how young she would look. If someone told me she was still in college, I would believe it. Thankfully, she, at least, looks older than Ada does, but not by much. Still, she has a confident air about her, and, presumably, she finished medical school and residency, so she's got to be at least 30, unless she's one of those child prodigies you hear about. But she has a sweet face, and that in itself is comforting. I can't imagine this woman giving me really bad news.
Mrs. Accardi? She says. I nod. I'm Dr. Suderman, she says. It's nice to meet you.
I nod again. Maybe I can get through this appointment without saying a single word.
I hear you have some concerns about your blood pressure, she continues.
I had it checked at the hospital where I work, I say. They told me it was a little high.
It's very high.
She sits down on the stool next to the computer in the room, logging in to access my file.
I'd like to do an exam and some tests to see if there's an underlying cause, but either way, I'd like to start you on a blood pressure medication today.
I've been under a lot of stress, I say, hoping that could change her mind. I recently moved. I have 2 young kids, and my job can be really stressful. If I weren't under so much stress, my blood pressure would be fine.
Stress definitely contributes to high blood pressure, she concedes. Working on stress management is a great idea. A lot of my patients say that meditation has helped them.
I tried meditation once and found it impossible. How are you supposed to just sit there without thinking for 5 entire minutes? That's like not breathing for 5 minutes. But I don't say that.
But either way, she says, you need to start medication for your blood pressure. It's way too high.
Great.
Dr. Suderman goes ahead with her exam. And the whole time, I'm seething with resentment. I'm not that old. I shouldn't be taking medication for my blood pressure. That's something my father did when I was a teenager, and he was old then. I am, well, at least 5 years younger than he was, I think. I leave the office, promising to pick up the prescription at the pharmacy on my way home, and she also puts in orders for blood tests, a mammogram, and something called a renal ultrasound. All this because my blood pressure is a little high. Okay, very high. But Enzo will be upset if I don't do everything she tells me to do. He, incidentally, got in to see a doctor a few days ago, and he has absolutely no medical problems whatsoever. He is a perfect specimen of good health. When I get back to the house, I notice Jonathan Lowell sitting on the front porch of 12 Locust. They have a swing mounted there, and he is rocking slowly on it, looking down at his phone. When he sees me get out of my car, he raises a hand in greeting.
Millie,
he calls out.
Do you have a minute?
Not really. I don't feel like having a conversation with my neighbor, but I also don't want to be rude, especially since Jonathan always seems extremely pleasant. I hope whatever he wants to speak to me about will be quick. I'm already feeling extremely stressed out since it took almost an hour for the pharmacy to get my medication ready when I stopped in on the way home. Jonathan hops off his front porch and sprints across our respective lawns to talk to me. Enzo would hate him walking over the grass, but I'm not about to give him a hard time.
How are you doing, Millie?
He asks me. Oh, fine, I lie. He flashes me an apologetic smile.
Listen, we have enjoyed having Nico over, helping out the last few weeks, but...
Oh no, now what?
Yesterday, he was putting some dishes away for us,
Jonathan says,
and he dropped one of the plates on the floor. It wasn't a big deal, but he just left it there. He didn't tell anyone.
Oh my God, I cover my mouth. I'm simultaneously surprised and not at all surprised. I'm so sorry.
Anyway,
Jonathan runs a hand through his thinning, light brown hair.
We're all set with him doing chores around our house to pay off the window. I think it's better if he stops coming.
Right. Sorry. If I owe you anything... I hope to God he doesn't tell me I owe them money. Even though Enzo is getting extra business thanks to Suzette, we are still on a very tight budget.
It's fine, Jonathan says. Really?
I look over Jonathan's shoulder at the house behind him. I see movement from one of the front windows, and I catch a flash of butterscotch hair. It's Suzette, and she's observing our interaction for some reason. Does she not trust me with her husband? It occurs to me that this is my chance to give her a taste of her own medicine. She's been flirting with Enzo since we got here. How would she like it if I do the same with her husband? And while I'm not attracted to Jonathan, there's nothing wrong with a little harmless flirting, right? I take a step closer to Jonathan. I tuck a strand of my dark blonde hair behind my ear and offer him what I hope is a come-hither smile. It's been a while since I flirted. I'm a bit out of practice.
I really appreciate that.
I slide my hand onto Jonathan's